Hello, everyone. This is Veronika Kirilenko of the New American Magazine. We're at CPAC and International Crisis Summit in Washington, D.C. And next to me is the member of European Parliament, Christian Tiris from Romania. Christian, it's great to see you. Christian, first of all, I would like to thank you so much for stopping by. My first question to you is the war in Ukraine. Your country borders the war zone. How do you people feel, how do Romanians feel about this war, and how has it impacted your country, essentially?
Well, thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts with you and with your listeners. You were asking me about the war in Ukraine. It's a tragedy what is happening there, and it should be a wake-up call, especially for the Western world. Because after the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine was the third nuclear power in the world. And the Ukrainian leadership at that time, back then, after the collapse of the Soviet Union, believed many promises that they received from the West, that if they give these nuclear weapons to Russia, they will be providing security and guarantees for their territorial integrity, guarantees from Russia, UK and US. I mean, look what is happening now. Not only now, but since 2014, when Crimea and part of Eastern Ukraine, especially Donbass and Lugansk, that region, those regions, were illegally annexed by Russia. So we have in Europe right now an illegal war of aggression against Ukraine. So, as you mentioned, Romania has, if I'm not mistaken, the longest border in Europe with Ukraine. And the second day after the war started, I was at the border to help with the refugees and see if we could do something from the European level to help the Romanian authorities to handle the amount of refugees that we received. And it is heartbreaking to see, mothers with kids, coming just with the luggage, leaving their house and maybe their husbands and brothers and fathers back home. And many of them remain in Romania, but most of them pass forward. They came to Romania and then from there they went to Western Europe to their relatives. But, as much as we could, we tried to help them to accommodate them. And besides the humanitarian crisis, as I said, it is a political crisis and a geopolitical crisis and challenge, because as Putin said, if he's not stopped in Ukraine, we don't know exactly where he's going to stop. So,
Christian, unfortunately, there is this narrative, even in conservative media, that portray Vladimir Putin as the last defender of Christian values, as the last, and Russia is the last bastion of resistance against globalism and one world governments. What's your take on this narrative? Is that how you see it?
No, contrary to that. I mean, he's using this narrative, this conservative narrative to his advantage, exactly as KGB used to use the liberal narrative during the Cold War to their advantage. I mean, if you look historically, for example, the former KGB supported many of the peaceful the fight for peace protests during the Vietnam War and during the Korean War here in the US. And it's the same thing happening right now with the conservative values. He's just hijacking the narrative and the speech and the arguments to claim that he is a so-called true defender of the Christian values. But that is totally false, because his actions speak louder than words. I mean, how can you be a true defender of Christian values when you give orders, to kill that many innocent people? How can you be a true defender of Christianity when you violate the sovereignty of another nation that you offer territorial guarantees and security guarantees in exchange for giving you the nuclear weapons? I mean, imagine if back then in the 90s, the Ukrainian leadership at that time would have not believed this security guarantees, and if they would have kept the nuclear bombs, what would have happened now? Do you think we would have this war? You see, so this is, again, we used to live in a world where politicians kept their word. If they signed a piece of paper, they respected it, but not anymore. So if these pieces of papers that we all signed, we have all these treaties, international treaties and conventions, if government leaders are not respecting them anymore, then clearly you will not have peace anymore. Nobody's going to trust anybody anymore, and everybody's going to try to arm themselves out to the teeth. And then, what is going to go from there? So we need back in politics, you know, people who are reasonable and people who are humble. Because at the end of the day, if you are in power, it doesn't mean that you have to use that power against your own people or against other people. You are in power to serve your people, to serve your nation, but not to, you know, conquer and to destroy other nations. So,
how do you see this war unfolding this year?
I mean, it's the Ukrainian army clearly struggling to defend the front line. I mean, you saw what is happening in the Capitol Hill with the Republicans and Democrats fighting over, sending aid to Ukraine, while they are politically debating if to send military aid or not. You know, the Ukrainian military is under heavy fire from the Russian army. And on top of that, it's showing another thing, that the Russian army and the Russian soldiers are willing to die for a cause. I mean, that it's a wrong cause, that's a different story. But they are willing to die for that cause, for the so-called motherland. But look what is happening in Europe and in the US. People are not willing to die for anything anymore. When you have a good life, you know, when everything is good, everything is perfect, yeah, I mean, you don't want to risk your life or sacrifice your life for anything. And historically, people are dying for three reasons: for their country, for their faith, and for their family. So look what is happening in the West in the past few decades. You know, the country doesn't matter anymore. Anyone who calls himself or herself a patriot is being, you know, laughed at and despised and disregarded as a decent person. As far as faith, you know, they pushed faith out of the public square. And as far as family, you don't know what a family is anymore. You know, you can marry a rock, you can marry a dog, you can marry a cat. So, I mean, after decades of confusion, obviously you don't have people willing to die anymore, because what to die for? Mm-hmm. So, again, it should be a wake-up call, especially for the West, because Russia is there. It is where it is. We don't have a problem with Russia per se. What everybody has a problem with is with this imperialistic ambition, I would say, that is trying to conquer different parts of different countries. And this is not okay at all. Besides that, you know, we have to find a way how to live together in peace there. But as far as the war is going to unfold in Ukraine, everybody's talking about peace, but very few people are talking about the just peace. And history proved that if you're not able to have a just peace, that peace will not last for long. And we have the history of the Second World War, when the Prime Minister of UK, of Great Britain, signed a treaty with Hitler in Munich, you know, and he came with a piece of paper. See, we have this treaty, you know, we have peace. No, they did not have peace. It was just an opportunity for Hitler, you know, to buy more time in order to arm more. So it's the same thing with Russia. As far as we are concerning Romania, obviously the vast majority of the people do not support the war. We support the territorial integrity of Ukraine. Besides the fact that, you know, we have our own challenges, I would say, with Ukraine because of the Romanian minorities living in Ukraine. But this is one side of the story. The other side of the story is we cannot accept that another country would invade a sovereign country like Ukraine and conquer territories and kill that many people and destroy everything there.
How do you envision a just peace in this war?
A just peace means, you know, for Russia to withdraw from Ukraine, period. How? That's a different story. But a just peace would be for Russia to withdraw from Ukraine. Because if Russia doesn't do that, and the Western countries are accepting the status quo that if you go into another country, you conquer a part of it, and then just because you are stronger at the moment, other people are forcing you to cut a deal with the invader, I'm telling you right now, no country will be safe anymore in this world. And this is going to open a can of worms, and the countries, they are going to rearm themselves, and you will have no stability anymore in the world. So it's just a matter of time before a world war is going to erupt.
So it sounds like Russia, by invading Ukraine, actually advanced the agenda of globalism.
Well, if you look historically, Putin, for example, is one of the first students of Karl Schwab. So when you talk about the new world order, it's actually a new world order that is sabotaging the old order that was created after the Second World War. So the old order, the current order, world order, let's call it that way, the one that we are living in right now, still living in right now, was based on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948. That based all the world order, I would say, on the fact that we are all created equal in dignity and rights. So when you change this, and when you put the state on a superior position than the individual, then the whole world already is changing. So the attacks that we see right now to our national sovereignty and individual liberty is from two angles. You see in an abusive way, I would say, the way that Russia does it, and in a more like judicial way and legal way that we see in the West, for example, undermining the sovereignty, the national sovereignty, the supremacy of constitutions, undermining the fundamental rights and liberties. So they are all attacks to actually the cornerstone of Western world, which is the individual liberty and freedoms.
Sir, what do you do as a member of the European Parliament to stop this evil agenda in its tracks?
I was the first and the strongest opponent, for example, of the digital COVID certificate. I was not vaccinated. And when they imposed the COVID certificate, and you had to show this certificate in order to enter the parliament, I refused to comply with that order. So I was the only one who refused to do so all the way to the end. But I received the highest fine at least in the history of the European Parliament. You know, that's what I was told. Thousands of euros. They fined me because I refused to display the digital green certificate. Not that I had one, but, you know, and I said, look, I'm refusing to comply with this order and I cannot show you nothing else except my badge that is proving that I'm a member of the parliament. And I got them into a legal argument and they said, why? And I said, let me tell you why. Because if I accept this precedent, that in order to exercise my mandate, I need something from you guys, the government, then where this precedent is going to lead? Next time you will tell me that I have to be blonde, then the other minute, where is this going to end? So I said, I'm going to refuse to comply with this order just to give a good example to other people across the globe to fight for their rights. And that actually happened. So as I said, I was the leading member of the European Parliament fighting this, and I was able to bring around me other members of Congress, in other members of the European Parliament. In October 2021, we had the first press conference in Strasbourg where we came out to the public and we exposed everything that happens with the digital green certificate. When we put that conference on the web, on YouTube, we had hundreds of thousands of views. We received not hundreds, but thousands of messages from people all across the globe telling us, oh my God, finally someone is saying something. Then we realized how, not only how big of a challenge we had ahead of us, but how big of a responsibility we have to keep this fight on, which we did. So one of the things, for example, that I've done was pushing for the publication of the contracts signed between the European Commission and this pharma companies. And I have some of these pages here with me. This is, for example, I'm talking about the way this contract was released to the public, not only to us as MEPs, to the whole public. So this is the table of content, and you can see on the second page here, the interesting thing is one of the chapter is blacked out. So we don't even know the name of the chapter. So the contract, it's about 120 pages long, and this is how they release the pages. Not only to us as members of the parliament, but to the public. Check this out.
This is outrageous.
No, this is transparency, right? This is transparency. Hundreds of billions of euros were paid for this. Look at this. This is outrageous. This is outrageous. I mean, in my country, for example, if a mayor, I mean, look, tens of pages like this. If a mayor would have signed a contract like this, for example, to I don't know, do anything for his mayor, for his mayor's office, he would have been arrested for abuse of office. It's absurd. It's absurd what was done during the pandemic. And we found out later on, imagine that in Europe, we are 460 million people. So Ursula von der Leyen purchased, with this kind of contracts, 4.6 billion, not million, billion would be, doses of vaccines. So now you tell me, and I'm asking, it's not just a rhetorical question, it's a logical question. When they bought these vaccines, injections, they're not really vaccines, but so when they bought these injections and they told us, well, they are safe and effective. You get one, then you will be free. That's what they told us. And you will be safe. Then you will be healthy. The question is, if they were so effective, why they sign a contract to buy 10 pieces per person of these kind of injections, if they are so effective? So they knew it from the beginning. So now looking back, because it's important during these moments, during in time in history, to look back to see who said what and who did what, because it's important to learn from history's mistakes in order to avoid them in the future. So exposing these contracts made a lot of people realize that we were lied to. And I mean, it's I would say many parties that are supporting this fight are winning more and more votes. In Romania right now, the coalition that I'm part of has almost 30% of the vote so far. So we are pushing to be the first coalition that will lead Romania and that will fight to defend the rights of all Romanians. We are also looking forward to do exactly the same in the new European Parliament. We will have in June of 2024 elections all across the European Union for the new members of the European Parliament. And, you know, we have many, you know, freedom fighters, colleagues, you know, across Europe that are doing exactly the same.
I've heard rumors that CPAC is going to Romania soon. Do you have any comment on that?
We had an exploratory discussion with CPAC leadership and we are working on that. And I'm looking forward to seeing them in Bucharest.
Christian Tiras, I would like to thank you so much for your time. Sir, please tell us what's the best way to follow you and your work.
Anybody can follow me on Twitter or on Facebook. They can search for my name, Christian, without the H, last name T-E-R-H-E-S, as in Sam. And they can find many of my speeches and work there.
Thank you so much. God bless you, sir.
God bless you.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.